Everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we finish out February on this very long five Thursday February somehow with Ghost, an Academy Award winning crazy film involving Whoopi Goldberg, who won the Academy Award, directed by the guys from Airplane of all things, and one of the greatest deaths in movie history, so enjoy. Thanks for doing all you do to keep us on the charts. Thanks for keeping us around. And as we enter a month completely designed by Matt Quinn, I hope you stick with us and enjoy, because it's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks, everyone. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we watch Ghost, presented by the men who made Airplane. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, and on panel, we've got Daniel.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I am dead, but don't call me Shirley.
And Kieko.
Hi.
Yeah, so I had never seen this before. We put it on the list because, you know, it's Valentine's Day, and we thought this would be a romantic movie, and, you know, there it is. It's kind of a...
I haven't seen it either, honestly.
Yeah. Well, Kieko, if you've seen it several times before, I guess you're doing our plot synopsis here. But no, I knew of it as kind of this famous romantic movie. And frankly, I'd seen a lot of the scenes before because they are very often parodied, right?
Yeah.
In fact, most famously, which I thought was hilarious, this is directed by Jerry Zucker of Zucker Abram Zucker, who made Airplane. And in Naked Gun 2.5, they parody it. And his brother, David Zucker, directed that. So I just love the idea that you're Academy nominated, won two Academy Awards. It was nominated for Best Picture, and it's parodied by your brother. That is like the greatest sibling rivalry thing I've ever heard. I love that. But yeah, this is Patrick Swayze being Patrick Sexy and Demi Moore, his wife, and he dies. And then there's Tony Goldwyn and a plot. Can you take us through it, Kieko?
Yeah, sure. So we have Patrick Swayze, who is hot, and Demi Moore, who is hot, and they have a third wheel, Carl, who is their friend. And Patrick Swayze is a businessman. I guess he works for a bank with Carl, and Demi Moore is a ceramics artist. And the movie starts out where they're like renovating their studio house thing. They find an Indian head penny. And Patrick Swayze said that that's a good omen. That's good luck. I had never heard of an Indian head penny. I thought the wheat pennies were the old pennies. So I did a deep dive into Google on that one. And then Patrick Swayze gets mugged and killed, and he exits his body and he sees himself, you know, kind of dying. And then there's like a weird dream sequence where he kind of realizes that he's dead and he sees the light and he doesn't go toward it because Demi Moore is calling him back. So he stays with her. And then he realizes that he's a ghost and he can't touch anything. Nobody can hear him. So he's kind of aimless for a bit. And then he goes onto the subway and meets a really creepy, scary subway ghost who screams at him and pushes him through some rail cars on the subway. And then he decides he's going to go to a psychic to try to talk to somebody because he needs to tell his girlfriend that he saw the bad guy break back into their house and the bad guy is going to come back or whatever. So he goes to talk to the psychic, who is Whoopi Goldberg. And while he's there, he realizes that she's a fraud and she's just making this stuff up. But actually, she can hear him. So then he starts harassing her to have her help him. And she reluctantly does after he tortures her with singing. And then Demi Moore doesn't really want to talk to this lady because she's mourning and she's, you know, sad or whatever. And I don't know how far we want to go into this, but most of the movie is Patrick Swayze trying to get in touch with his girlfriend, with Whoopi Goldberg reluctantly helping him.
Yeah.
Is that good?
No, that's a good back of the box. You know, turns out that Patrick Swayze, the titular ghost, is trying to get in trying to protect his wife, to me.
Now, one thing about this movie is the main characters, except Whoopi Goldberg, are so boring. I mean, did you ever see Free Guy? Do you remember the opening where we're introduced to him and it's like, my name is Guy and I work at the bank? You could put that in this movie and not change a word.
No, and it's funny, Keiko, because you said he's businessman. That's what he is. He does business. Like, I mean,
his job is bank.
His job is bank.
At the beginning, it's like, you have clients. Like, okay.
I mean, I can appreciate the fact that these are just beefcakes because, like, you said they're renovating this house and he finds an Indian head penny, yada, yada. But, like, they're just shirtless dudes with sledgehammers. like it's a gay steel mill.
There's and
they're
a wearing, lot like, of these... slow-mo, too, in those entry. And, like, there was a lot of abs and, like, slow-mo waving of the sledgehammers. It was great.
No, I mean, and it's like, and again, it's Tony Goldwyn, who, if you don't know, just imagine Michael Cera.
That's like, exactly who I was thinking of the whole time. I was like, he looks, but at first I couldn't figure it out. So I was like, who does he look like to me? And then I realized halfway through that he looks like Michael Cera.
He looks exactly like Michael Cera. And it's funny because it's just Michael Cera with six-pack abs and pecs is very unsettling because he still has that kind of dopey, like, he doesn't know what's happening kind of look on his face. And it's just, and I immediately think of Michael Cera, and I know he's done a lot, but it's always his Arrested Development character where there's just a rain cloud and they're playing the Charlie Brown theme. Like, and so it just, and this scene is a perfect example because after smashing down walls and being all like hypo, like really like they're two sexy dudes. And then Demi Moore like jumps up into Swayze's like wraps her legs around his waist. He hugs her close, and then they just kind of zoom out, and there's Tony Goldwyn holding a sledgehammer, watching his friends make out. It's just like,
By the way, that whole sequence you're talking about is the sequence with the Everly Brothers playing on a jukebox, and then
No. This is the cold open. This is
right. There. Yeah. Okay. There's a couple makeout scenes in here.
There are,
but we'll get to that one a little later.
Yeah, that one's a little bit later. This one, straight after this, is when we see them in the elevator and they're like joking around. This is to establish that they are best friends because they're joking about having like rashes on their privates in the elevator.
Oh, dude!
To make everybody uncomfortable.
Contagious rashes.
Oh right, that whole almost kind of Monty Python, but. Really right. Stupid bit.
Oh my god.
I don't know. That's... I feel like it's really interesting to hear you guys' perspective on this movie because this is one, much like Pretty Woman, that I saw constantly on TV growing up. Like I remember liking it as a kid, and I knew that there were some scenes that were in the movie that I never really saw as a kid because I watched it on TV and those scenes are cut out. But
now, what's cut out of Ghost?
Huh?
I have to ask, what's cut out of Ghost that's so objectionable?
It would have been the first love scene, the first steamy love scene, the one you're talking about, where they start off at the famous pottery wheel and move things away. and then I think some of the more violent scenes later.
Tony Goldwyn's death is incredibly violent. Where you see that chunk of glass there, like that is an old timer.
Even Patrick Swayze's death is graphic because, like, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna let the kids watch this, and I was like, that's so silly. He's so silly. He's a ghost.
Yeah, no, I imagine like because you could cut it in a way, even the mugger. When he dies, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
There's a way to cut it where you see the two cars crash, he makes his face, and then you see him as a ghost.
That's
and then
it.
You never see that bloody corpse. Because that corpse, they used all the ketchup in South Hollywood. Like, that is remarkable. This dude, that scumbag. He's such a great scumbag. I hope he did some other work. Maybe he's Shakespearean. Maybe he played Othello or something. Because like otherwise, he just looks like a scumbag.
Yeah.
And he dies like a scumbag.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I.
But it takes a long time before we get to the netherworld. Before then, it's a bunch of like steamy sex scenes, which are pretty good, but then a bunch of like random relationship talk. Like, there's a scene of them at the furniture store. There is no movie that I can think of that's improved by a scene at a furniture store.
I will say, I know you were shocked, about like the how many Academy Awards that this was nominated for and who won, yada yada yada. This is a strange year for the Academy Award. I'm just looking at who won and like who lost and yada yada. I think Best Pictures was Dances with Wolves, right?
Mm-hmm. It was.
And the much maligned Godfather 3 was also nominated. And the strange movie Awakenings is there. And of course, the one that probably should have won is Goodfellas. Goodfellas was 1990. But I mean, we've talked about this before, and I know it really bums you out. But the truth is, the Academy Awards is designed generally to bring attention to movies, and they're not going to bring attention to a movie that says fuck 400 times or whatever it is in Goodfellas. No, it's a shame because it's by far the best movie on the list.
This was still back when AMPAS tried to nominate and occasionally recognize some really popular movies just because they wanted to stay relevant, and yeah. Ghost was definitely that, and so was Dances with Wolves, for that matter. I mean, that movie made a whole bunch of money at the box office.
Just if I may, for one second, another I wish he could have won an Academy Award here. So for Best Original Song, nothing we did here, obviously. Young Guns 2, John Bon Jovi was nominated. Godfather 3, Carmine Coppola was nominated. John Williams was nominated for Home Alone, Somewhere in My Memory, the song that is sung on Christmas morning after we see Catherine O'Hara come back.
Okay. All right.
Dick Tracy, where Stephen Sondheim won for writing the Dick Tracy theme song. But the weird one here is for the movie Postcards from the Edge, which I doubt you've seen. I've heard of it. I've never seen it. It's a Carrie Fisher movie. She wrote it, starring Meryl Streep and Shirley MacLaine. But the song, the titular song, which is called Postcards from the Edge / I'm Checking Out, was written by Shel Silverstein. Shel Silverstein nominated for an Academy Award. The Oscars are so much fun. Anyway.
Was he still alive at that point?
So the reason we're doing this, of course, during February is it's a spicy rom-com. I don't know if I'd call it a com, but it's definitely a rom. It's a romantic movie, an erotic thriller, perhaps.
That's really interesting. This movie is charming and funny. Like, is there such a thing as light horror? like, yeah. That has to be like a thing, yeah.
Oh, no, I mean, and I will say one of the things that generally defines the Academy Award winners are that they don't fit nicely into a genre. And this is that. Like, there are some truly touching moments. There are some very funny moments. And February generally is Academy Award month. And Whoopi wins for this. And I really like her performance, honestly. Her competitors, since we're playing this game, were Annette Bening for The Grifters. And again, Annette Bening, great actress. Don't know The Grifters, so I couldn't comment. Diane Ladd at Wild at Heart. Mary McDonnell with Dances with Wolves. And again, Dances with Wolves is a weird movie. Whatever. And Lorraine Bracco for Goodfellas.
Come the hell on. Come on. Whoopi is the best part of this movie, but how is she better than Lorraine Bracco?
Frankly, I think of those people I mentioned, I like Goodfellas. The one who I think really got screwed is Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci should have won. And of course, Scorsese should have won something.
Oh, Joe Pesci did win.
Oh, he did? Good. Okay.
He did win.
I guess, I wonder if Tony Goldwyn was nominated. By the way.
I don't think he was, but.
Wait, is that Carl?
Yes. He would have been the supporting actor. Best supporting actor would have been Tony Goldwyn.
You know, I didn't put two and two together on this initially, but add a few pounds to that guy moving to New Jersey. Yeah, I can see him living next door to the Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
By the way, best supporting actor, this is a trip. Jeremy Irons won for a movie I've never heard of, Reversal of Fortune. Richard
Oh,
Harris was nominated. Go ahead.
that was best actor, yeah.
Yeah, best actor. Richard Harris, the first Dumbledore, right? He won. He was nominated for The Field. Costner for Dances with Wolves, though Costner won director, so whatever. De Niro for Awakenings. I guess they didn't nominate him for Goodfellas because he was nominated for best actor for Awakenings, and Gerard Depardieu for Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh boy, that aged well.
I mean, we will probably never do a version of Cyrano de Bergerac because it's such a strange property and it's been done a million times. The Steve Martin Roxanne, for example, but that one is a
Oh,
weird
okay.
one. And I promise we'll talk about a Ghost, but like, again, this is a kind of our Oscar movie of that we usually do one of. And if you don't believe me, check the one of like two episodes they recorded without me ever. The Forrest Gump episode where Daniel is spitting hot fire and no one else wants to go along with him. And I agree, it's not a great movie, but I don't hate it the way Daniel hates things. Daniel hates, like, truly.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong there. I like to think I was an adult and was the respectful of everybody during that episode, but I mean you're right. And that's the weird thing about this movie too, is really the only impact it had on popular culture for something that was so big was the pottery scene, which
That
everyone gets
scene,
wrong
yeah.
anyway.
The
I will
scene. Hot as hell. But second, something I just tickles me to no end is it's directed from the dude who did Airplane, and perhaps that's why to me the best scenes are the kind of silly scenes, the over-the-top scenes, the ridiculous scenes, like the scene where he shows up to Whoopi Goldberg's séance and he's actually a ghost and she actually hears him and actually can't see the voice because he's a ghost. Yeah.
And like that's very funny. And because again, it's Jerry Zucker, and that's kind of his bread and butter.
His place. Yeah, that makes sense.
But the funny thing to me is, and Daniel, you would probably know this better than anyone, is it an insult for your picture to get nominated for Best Picture and then him not being nominated as a director? Because the idea that the guy who did Airplane would be nominated as Best Director tickles me to no end, and unfortunately it didn't happen here.
Isn't that what happened to Green Book, too?
Absolutely it is. It's
One of
so
them
funny to
Farrelly
me.
brothers who makes the fart jokes directed a movie that won Best Picture, and I don't think he was nominated for Best Director.
Yeah, it's a shame. I just read, and I will plug it. There's a movie called Surely You Can't, there's a book, excuse me, called Surely You Can't Be Serious, which is an oral history with Zucker, Abram Zucker, and then people along the way of the making of Airplane, and it's quite delightful. So if you
Wow.
can find that, just do it, and I promise I'll stop talking about it now. Other than the fact that he's the director, so he also directed, because I usually do this, previous episode or future episode, My Best Friend's Wedding, which is outrageous. That is an
He
outrageous
did.
movie. Jerry Zucker?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oof.
So he did the new IMDb is the hardest thing to deal with. And there's so many random applets in it that it completely falls apart. I'm sorry, I'm wrong. He wrote the script and produced My Best Friend's Wedding. The only things he's directed are Airplane, Top Secret, fine, Ruthless People, I
Oh, I
like
love
that.
ruthless people.
Yeah, Ghost, this. First Night, which is a Sean Connery movie, and then Rat Race in 2001. He spent most of his time producing vague comedies,
Oh,
including Fred.
he isn't the one that went crazy and started directing far right propaganda.
No, that was I think Abrams.
Okay.
Jim Abrams.
It was one of them.
Yeah. I, whatever. It's a shame because in the 80s and early 90s, those guys were kind of my favorites. Because I love Naked Gun movies. I love the, what's the Top Gun parody?
Top Secret?
No.
No,
Top
no,
Secret.
Hot Shots.
The Hot Shots movies. I love those. I like Top Secret, but after that you start getting sad. Although I did like Rat Race. I thought Rat Race was funny, and a return with Whoopi Goldberg, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So anyway, we have the sexy opening, and then we see that Tony Goldwyn is checking out a Ferrari. It's a Ferrari, right? It's not a Lambo. Anyway,
Yeah.
some
It's
Italian
a
car
yuppie
that's
car. It's a yuppie mobile. That's what it is.
And he has a Mustang that he hasn't paid off yet. But they work on Wall Street. They're walking down the street. They're talking. And then Patrick Swayze, who I don't know how short these actors and actresses around him are, but he looks tall in this. And that can't be right. But anyway,
Yeah, I don't know.
essentially, the plot is moved ahead after a highly erotic scenes involving the Everly brothers. Which, by the
I did
by,
want to mention something about the pottery scene because I was curious. I don't know if you guys have ever worked on a wheel before. It's actually very, very hard. So I've taken ceramics classes. Okay, yeah, no. Yes, I did say
I see
that.
what you did there.
So I've taken classes and like I'm not good at throwing on a wheel. So all of my stuff comes out really small. Like I can't
This
make
is just a
anything.
gold mine right here.
So it's hard to make something that big. And I was curious, and Demi Moore actually did take some classes to learn how to throw on a wheel. But what happened was Patrick Swayze decided to mess with her and intentionally smash her pot. And that was the tape that made it to the movie. So that
Well, at
wasn't
least she
actually planned.
beforehand she is working it, so she proved that she can do, and then he comes in as the goofy husband, which it is what it is.
What I would
I find
guess
it.
is that someone got the pot that tall for her, and then she could go in and actually like work it because getting something to go up that high is very, very challenging. Just
And
saying.
I will make a note for myself to remember to do this, but I need to upload the clip from Naked Gun 2.5. Because I kept thinking, like, I knew the scene, and then I realized I didn't know the scene because I'd only seen the parody of it. But there's a scene where the ripped guy is Leslie Nielsen, which he's just not. The man was 70 at the time. But where he does the thing where there's the top-down shot, and you see her hands molding at Priscilla Presley, and then his hands come around, and then a third set of hands come around, which I guess is Tony Goldwyn. And then as she's in her ecstasy and he's kissing her neck, she puts her feet down all the way on the wheel and it just starts splattering them. Which, by the way, Zucker can pretend he's not a comedian here, but she's definitely just fisting this pot and
Oh,
like
yeah.
she's getting in there good. It's amazing.
That's what you have to do. You have to hold the inside. Like, it's very challenging, guys. You
Oh
have to
no, I
hold.
believe it. And shout out to my friend Hope Smith, who is not only a ceramics artist and very good at it, but her design was stolen by Lowe's, I think. And there's currently litigation going on. And we might cut that part, but she's a
Yeah.
very good ceramics artist and she sells her stuff at the local crafts fair. So if you go to, like Marist Holiday Traditions or the Decatur Art Festival, she'll be there selling little like votive candle holders. And she's excellent at it. She teaches it here. And it was one of those things where she's like, in case people think what the arts department does is easy, let's just have some random teachers try this on the wheel. And she's like, let's talk about how we make a pot. And she's doing a vase that's maybe a foot and a half tall, and like it's just going everywhere for everyone else, and she's making it look easy. And here's the thing that I think Zucker does very well. Like most arts and most sports, if people are very good at it, it almost looks like poetry or ballet, right? And so you put the Everly brothers on. And by the way, this time period, the Everlys are kicking ass because You Lost That Loving Feeling is just 2 years before the star of Top Gun. So good on them. But
Well, the
like,
Big Chill started it with that Motown soundtrack, and then it became Boomer Nostalgia, Always and Forever.
of course. I mean, and I'd rather the boomer nostalgia than the Reagan stuff that was going on at the time. But it just wouldn't work as
Well,
well as if a early
considering how many
Metallica
times
song is played.
Nancy, Considering how many times Nancy went and saw psychics, I mean, the ghost movie could very well have played out in real life for Ronnie.
Dude, could you imagine this being like played in the White House? I'm sure it was. I mean, Reagan was a movie guy before Clinton was the movie guy. Reagan was
I
the
don't
movie guy.
know. Well, this came out would have come out with the first Bush, and I don't know how many movies he screened.
Do people die in it? I bet you he watched Commando in the White House.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, he would sneak into the CIA and watch. I was like, now boys, I'm gonna go in and watch Commando, and no matter what you hear, you don't open that door.
What was the movie that Trump would watch with his kids, but fast forward through the boring parts? Oh, Bloodsport. He
Blood,
used to
yes, Bloodsport, yes. Oh my God.
he would fast forward through the dialogue, which, by the way, that movie's already like 90 minutes, 85 minutes. Like, let's get to the fighting. I'm like, that's all it is.
You know what? I hate to say this because I know it's going to be edited out of context, but I'm kind of on his side with that decision.
Oh, all you need are the fights. Like, if
Yeah.
it was originally just like a Hong Kong action film and it was in Canto, I would just be watching it in Cantonese. Like, because I'm like, I don't care about any of these interpersonal relationships. Get to the punching. By the way, at this point, we can just get to it. Patrick Swayze goes on a date with Demi Moore. They go see a movie, and then he goes down like Batman's mom. Like, I practically expected the pearls to be falling down. Like, they take a left turn down Crime Alley, and this guy comes out with the gun. And to
And
me,
here's
oh,
a big
God.
problem with this movie. Patrick Swayze didn't need to die.
No.
He kept fighting the dude even after Demi Moore was out of danger, was like begging him to stop fighting.
So I wonder if it's not a script thing. I don't know this guy. The guy who wrote the script is Ruben, I think. Something Ruben. Yeah, Bruce Joel Ruben.
That's in the movie, though. That's what, like, later on, Carl goes and he tells the guy, you weren't supposed to kill him. You were just supposed to get his wallet.
See, my thing is, I think he was trying to make a character who's a do-gooder. In the same way, like, he also doesn't need to be trying to figure out who's stealing the money.
Right.
The fact is, he feels like a wrong has been done, and therefore he's going to do something about it. I think it's his character flaw. Because if he just looked the other way with the money, it wouldn't have affected him in any way, and he would still be alive. By the way, this writer wrote some of my favorite movies. Daniel, you'll appreciate this because this would have been an even better ending for the movie in some ways. This is the guy who wrote Jacob's Ladder.
Oh, there you go.
And for those of you who don't know, spoiler alert, you can skip ahead by 30 seconds. Jacob's Ladder, which was written the same year, 1990 is the year Jacob's Ladder came out. The whole movie plays out, and it turns out this was the guy's last vision before he died. Literally, the last shot is it goes back to the accident and they're zipping up the body bag. He was dead the whole time. And he writes a ghost about a guy who was dead the whole time. Come on,
Except
Phil,
for
you got
real.
something else.
Yeah.
He also wrote previous episode Deep Impact and crap movie Stuart Little 2. And recent movie The Time Traveler's Wife.
That ain't so recent no more.
That was the most recent credit he had. The guy passed away.
Oh, okay.
But other than that, he did Deadly Friend, which is a pretty good episode and probably a future stay tuned. You know what? The guy deals with death in every single one of his episodes and movies rather. And I guess with Deep Impact, he's just like, fuck it, let's kill everyone.
Kill them
So
all.
he was the Abraham Simpson of screenwriters. Oh, death.
Oh, fuck. I will say the shot where he dies, I really like. So you hear that, you look at Demi Moore and she yells, stop it, let him go. You hear the gunshot, you see the thug run down the street, you see Swayze chase after the guy, and then he turns back to Demi and sees that she is cradling his now bloody body. Then you see him look up to the heavens, and there's the sparkly twilight kind of, whatever. And then he decides to run back to her. That's
Yeah.
excellent. And then we cut to the hospital where, he essentially dies on the table, as is the case. She is crestfallen. And Swayze is just kind of looking around, watching, trying to figure out what happens until this old guy addresses him, which, again, I think is excellent. You know, because we see her literally leaving the scene, talking to a, you know, a guy who doesn't have any lines. He looks like Robert Goulet in a three-piece suit. You see the, you know, you see the shield on it, the bra, like that he's the detective. And then he's just looking at the slab where he died. And this old guy's like, ah, it happened to you too, huh? Yes, that son of a bitch. Like, it's just, it's great. Like, this little old Jewish man walks up and says, so you're a new corpse.
Congratulations. You're new here, yeah.
Like, he, and again, maybe it's just that I'm a cynic. I almost wanted the Beetlejuice, like, giving Alec Baldwin the manual, like, so you're dead. Congratulations, you're dead. But it's because I'm a Simpsons guy, and that's a Simpsons joke.
Honestly, it would have made for a more interesting movie because so much about the afterlife isn't really explained. I mean, what, we see all of three ghosts?
Yeah.
And also, here's the big thing for me. If he can't interact with physical objects, how is he not constantly falling through the floor?
I actually wrote that down as well. I want to know why ghosts stand on the floor and go through walls. So
without concentrating, like we are shown they have to do later. So it is possible for a ghost to interact with the physical world, but it takes a lot of energy and most can't do it, which I believe was also another 90s movie, Ghost Can't Do It, but I'm not going to look it up.
We don't need to watch Ghost Can't Do It.
And yeah,
you saw that movie.
The most interesting thing about Beetlejuice was the explanation, or at least the hinting at, of what the afterlife is really like. And we don't really get that here, except that there's a heaven and a hell, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is just a romance. Like, I feel like they're like, that stuff doesn't matter in this movie, because really all that matters is their love for each other. So, no,
hear me out here. I've got a pitch for a reboot of Ghost.
All right, so, let's hear it.
Okay, so what if Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze's characters, the same thing happens. They're a couple. They're in New York. Patrick Swayze dies and comes back of a ghost, and he has to go to Whoopi Goldberg in order to communicate with his lover. But along the way, ghosts never learn how to possess bodies, which also happens later. There's a actually pretty sweet scene where Swayze possesses Goldberg's body so that he can kiss Moore again. But you see it with Swayze in there. What if along the way, Swayze can't possess Goldberg. Goldberg goes along and she ends up falling in love with Demi Moore's character, and then her and Demi Moore get together instead. And then the ghost, his whole finishing unfinished business is getting his wife a new partner so that she won't be without love.
That is literally the plot of Ghost Can't Do It, which is the year before.
Damn it.
Because Ghost Can't Do It is John Derek. And if you don't know John Derek and Bo Derek, how they met up, it's a strange story because she was like 16 at the time. So they went to another country and then they legitimized it. Don't look up any image search for the movie Bolero. Long story short, the John Derek proxy is a fat old Scotsman married to Bo Derek. And he drops dead. The whole thing is him trying to hook her up with a hot young, like, essentially cabana boy so that they can bone and then he can possess the body so the fat old Scotsman can keep nailing his hot wife. And Bo Derek is walking around, like, nude the whole movie. And that was literally...
Of course she was.
And it was almost right. Yeah. It's the year before this. This is... That's okay. 1989. And Donald Trump has a cameo in that one where Bo Derek... now possessed or being kind of informed by her husband, the businessman, tricks Donald Trump into some business. And that business. And then he goes, that's some good business. You're a hot blonde lady. And then they move on. and that's Ghosts Can't Do It. And then we never heard of Donald Trump again. It's like during COVID, we did a riff with Cineprov on Home Alone 2. And that scene came up, we're like, this will be hilarious. And then I just watched it and I got sad and confused. Merry Christmas, Kevin McAllister. Donald Trump told you how to get to the lobby. Anyway, so somewhere around here, Tony Goldman, well, we find out later, Tony Goldman, the mugger shows up at their apartment and then breaks in. We don't really know why at this point, but he's rifling around. Tony Goldwyn has desperately tried to get Demi Moore out of the house. And the second they leave, the mugger shows up and starts rifling around. She returns in 45 seconds. And we're all afraid that she is going to get like shot or something. And I imagine when they filmed these scenes, Swayze was actually acting in the room and they're all ignoring him. But like Swayze's mad face is kind of funny. I thought it was kind of because he's just like scrunching over his face, like, you should stay away from her.
it's not quite as funny as Patrick Swayze and Donnie Darko, but still, yeah, I can see the appeal there.
No kitty porn dungeon this time, huh?
Nope.
But now Swayze essentially tries to follow the mugger back to his place, and following him back to his place, sees that he's on the phone with someone we don't know who yet, blah blah blah. But this is where Swayze realizes that cats can see ghosts, which explains a lot. And the cat claws the mugger in the face. He escapes out the door. Swayze follows him to his apartment. And when he walks out the front door of the apartment, this is where we get Whoopi Goldberg, because she is a psychic who lives just across the street from that apartment. And I do love the scenes of Whoopi Goldberg because, of course, she's fucking the Whoopster's great. She's so good. The previous month, in my month, of course, she showed up as Guinan in Star Trek Generations. And it's so funny, the way she talks, the way she acts, the way she does the stuff she does, it almost feels like she's not acting. She just talks, which makes her a good actress. And again, Daniel, I agree with you. I think in general, other than the pottery scene, she's the best part of this movie. And she drives the plot and she can deliver lines and she's very funny. I like these two women who are dressed like they're mourning, who are like her Flava Flaves, the hype women. They're great.
Right. Right.
I love how she comes out like she's dressed for a gospel choir, but like a sequined one. Like it's amazing. Every choice that she makes is so good. I like the little old lady who blesses herself when she shows up. Everything about this is great. And then like Daniel said, she's supposed to be like this psychic, this voodoo priestess, all these things, and it's all a fraud, except her mother, her grandmother, and great-grandmother actually could talk to ghosts the way she understood it. She's just the one who's all 80s razzle-dazzle until Patrick Swayze shows up.
Miss Cleo was very popular back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, go ahead, Kiku.
So, I mean, I was just going to say, I thought that I agree that Whoopi is the funniest, but I think Patrick Swayze is also really good. I mean, I feel like, is it because I'm a girl that maybe I'm...
No, I mean, here's the thing. She's a good spice to make this movie something. Like, you could have done this where there was any other female actress and it would not be the same. He's the anchor to this movie. I don't think it works without him. I can't think of someone else. The difference here is that, again, she's the flavor. You know, like, he's the base.
Yeah.
She highlights it. They have chemistry, too. She is immediately frustrated with him and doesn't want to do this. And we'll get, I mean, I think my favorite scene with the two of them is when she goes to the bank with him. And, like, her Sunday breath, like, it's not Sister Act where she's, like, wearing a call girl outfit. But like she's wearing a black woman's Sunday Southern like church dress, you know. Like I and it's just
it looks like an extra in the Blues Brothers or Steel Magnolias, one of the two.
Exactly what that is. And it is over. let's be honest, it's Jerry Zucker, so it's Blues Brothers. But like, she's got the hat, her hair is pinned up, and like the whole thing is this, and again, it's young Whoopi Goldberg, and she's looking great opposite this Patrick Swayze, and she can't see him. The direction here is good. No one looks directly at him, but they also look through him and around him, and he's just there being an asshole, especially this next scene, which Kiyoko alluded to, where he's just singing Henry VIII I Am for presumably hours.
Oh, my God.
go ahead.
It's also funny because when Demi Moore keeps, like, turning down Whoopi, she keeps, like, not wanting to talk to her, even though Sam is... Patrick Swayze is giving her all of these like intimate details to tell her to prove that it's real, but she doesn't want to believe it until they're in the diner and she finally like breaks through to her. And she says, he kept me up all night singing, I'm Henry VIII, I am. And she said, oh yeah, that's how he got me to go on my first date with him. And I was wondering like, how did he have access to her to keep her up all night? Can you just imagine
a shitty version of Say Anything where instead of John Cusack with a giant boombox, he's just going,
oh my
Henry
God.
Henry VIII, I am. Henry VIII, I am. I love that so much. Also,
That would be the airplane parody of Say Anything right there.
That's exactly. Well, I mean, again, this, it's so funny because when you're doing a parody like that, you want the scenes with the most emotion because something that is highly emotional is immediately parodyable, which is why the scene with the pot is so easy to make fun of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's a lot. And I mean, and that's the thing I've always, as someone who gets paid to do comedy, again, we're almost to 500 people. Keep subscribing and sharing. We're getting close. But I think part of that is there is a fine line between comedy and everything, drama, emotion, because you have to understand people to be funny, right? You have to be able to make a connection in an intimate way with someone to make them laugh. And therefore, to have a romantic moment is very similar, right? And so I think that's part of it. But at the same time, like him just sitting in that chair going, I'm Henry VIII, I am Henry VIII. If you told me that that's what they did to make, like, I don't know, Abrams agree to film Airplane as a movie, I'd believe it, because that seems very lived in. Like, there's just something about it that's so great. Also, just as a bit of direction, there is something they do, and I think it's a direction note. Maybe it's a studio note, who knows? They want to make it very clear that the relationship between Whoopi and Swayze is platonic and he needs her help. And there's nothing like him watching her change or shower because she's wearing, I don't know if you noticed this.
They're like pajamas. Bloomers. Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah.
I
and her pajamas are like a onesie for a kid. Like they're giant and they're like lavender colored. Because like, again, we've seen how, like Demi Moore, and Demi Moore's wearing like, probably one of his undershirts is like this big loose t-shirt, and she's wearing those very high-waisted 80s like thong like underwear, and like Whoopi yeah. Goldberg is there like footy pajamas. I'm like, there is no sexual chemistry here, and he's just there wearing his burgundy shirt because it's 1990 and that's what you wore. But it's just yeah. it's funny. I love that so much. This is where she shows up dressed like on the go Whoopi with her little John Lennon glasses and goes outside and goes, hey, I know you. I was the one who called you and you hung up on me. By the way, apparently your husband, right before he banged you, like nibble your earlobe. Like they're talking about their dating life in a very intimate way. And Whoopi's like, I would like to go home. And Patrick Swayze's like, I'm a ghost talking to you. So you're doing what I say. Otherwise I'm going to break into song again. I've been brushing up on Hamilton. Like, it's again, really, it's so much.
Wouldn't it be so much more interesting if the movie was completely from Whoopi's perspective? She's a phony psychic who has been calling people for decades. We find out later that she's been in and out of prison for fraud various times by Bill Dautry from King of the Hill. I'm not sure if anyone else noticed that was Stephen Root. All right.
It's the guy with the stapler from Office Space.
Office Space, yes.
Yeah.
And then suddenly a real ghost reaches out to her, and she has to come to terms with, oh God, I was scamming all these vulnerable people and playing with their emotions. And now this ghost actually wants me to do something right. Wouldn't that be more interesting?
I mean, if you did a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead of this movie, Ray Stantz from Ghostbusters better show up in the third act. I mean, because like they're just down the road. Like,
yeah,
I there's just something about this. Like, I mean, first of all, I don't think you're wrong, but again, her as the spice in this movie is the reason she wins the Academy Award. I think you put her in any more, it's a little bit too much. I think the fact that the majority of this plot is kind of a milquetoast, like, you know, I mean, we were talking Scorsese earlier. It's almost a Wolf of Wall Street. Like, there's a guy embezzling money. Who's going to get out? We better kill the guy who's about to leak the information. And Tony Goldwyn didn't want him to die, but he also didn't want him to figure out what was going on. Because I imagine on the other end of the line, whenever he's talking on the phone, is literally Joe Pesci from Goodfellas. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, Tony Goldwyn is in deep to the mob, and he needs to get out by embezzling all this money to, I forget the woman, Linda Phillips or whatever, who Whoopi Goldberg is pretending to be.
Emma something.
Yeah. But like, it's...
Echo, I'm kind of leaning on you here. What was that? What was her phony name? Emma Miller?
Rita Miller.
Rita Miller.
Rita yeah. Miller, that was it.
I wanted to ask, are we past the scene where Michael Cera tries to seduce Demi Moore?
Oh, that's right where we are.
So I thought it was really funny that he like gets something on his shirt and he takes it off. Like, and my husband, we were watching it together, and he was like, wait, who does that? Like, why would you take your shirt off if you just drop, if you spill something on it? And I was like, when you're trying to seduce someone. Like, and he was like, that doesn't work. And I was like, you wouldn't know, you've never tried it. But it
and
didn't
you also
work
don't
for
have
Michael
Tony
Cera.
Goldwyn's abs. Like,
yeah.
If I was sitting next to my wife and I'm like, and she spilled soup on herself and was just like, well, I guess this top's coming off. I'm like, interesting. But it's also funny because like nowadays, nowadays clothes are a little bit more form fitting. Like, so if I was ripped, everyone would know. Like, but like the fact is, Tony Goldwyn is wearing a parachute this whole time,
oh,
and then
thinks,
a jacket
you think
on.
He wants, but she knows. She saw him when he was naked with his sledgehammer.
Yeah, let me go. Let me tell you, that hammer was out. and so he's just like, I'm sorry, you're grieving. It's so much.
He's so close to saying, these are not the hammer.
The hammer is my penis.
Yes.
But it's, and also, it's funny because it's late at night. He came to visit her and check in, yada, yada, yada. And at this point, Swayze
that's when she tells him that the lady came to her and gave him the name and address of this the mugger, and she doesn't know what to believe. And we see him freak out, like be nervous for some reason. She didn't notice that. And Patrick Swayze follows him back when he leaves because he says he's going to go check it out. Surprise, surprise, he's the bad guy. It was a setup. He did it.
Which, by the way, at this point, I figured it out in the first, whatever, 25, 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. There are no real plot twists in this at all. I mean, it's pretty predictable.
Academy Award.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the love story.
It is. It is.
I did. I found out that Carl, the actor that plays him, actually had kind of a bad time after the movie came out, sort of like Joffrey, Game of Thrones, because he, like, I saw a story that he was refused help from a waitress in a restaurant, like right after the movie came out, and she didn't want to serve him, and then
oh my
finally,
God.
She asked him, she was like, are you an actor? And he was like, yeah. And then she realized that he played the guy that betrays Patrick Swayze, and she just had this like ingrained bias against him. She said she didn't remember why she hated him, but she just hated him, and she thought he was a guy that she dated that treated her badly. She was like, I don't know why, I just cannot help this guy, and it's because he betrayed Patrick Swayze, so I feel sorry for
That's
him.
amazing. That's great. No, I love that because it's the same story that I forget the name, Daniel, you might know, but the actor who played the EPA guy, Dickless, in Ghostbusters
Yeah,
tells.
the same thing happened to him. I forget. It's not Will Atherton. Is that the
Yeah,
actor?
it's Atherton. That's right. It is. But like everyone treated him like garbage. Like, how do you do it to the Ghostbusters? And it's like, it was a movie. And at the end, I get dumped like 500 pounds of marshmallow floof hits him. By the way, Sudsy, we can play a little game here that I don't know. You're good at these kinds of things. He was in a previous episode, Tony Goldwyn. Can you remember what it was?
Ooh, man, oh man, and he looked familiar too.
Because he looks like Michael
When I
Cera.
saw his, yeah, a little bit.
He was in actually two
Oof.
previous episodes, I believe. You
Give him
got
a
me.
genre. Give him a genre.
Okay, I'll tell you what, you're not gonna believe this. One is animated and the other one is action.
Okay, so I've got his Wikipedia pulled up here.
Transformers.
What's up?
Transformers.
Wait, that was him?
No, I'm just guessing because he said
No,
it
he
was
was not
no,
in Transformers.
I see. I think I can guess what the two are now, and I just never knew that was him.
Yeah, go ahead.
He was the voice of Tarzan in Disney's Tarzan.
That's the
I never
one.
knew that. I remember Lance Henriksen and in that movie, and Rosie O'Donnell just annoying the piss out of me, but I don't remember him.
That was a movie that we
And
did, and I was literally watching the end of it as people were showing up at the house. Like, I had not prepared. That
now that's
was a
yeah,
long time
that's
ago. That was
in there.
second season, third season.
A long time ago.
The other episode was The Sixth Day. Another Schwarzenegger movie.
What was he?
He was Michael Drucker in it. He was the villain, the guy who was in charge of the company.
Yeah.
And looking at his wiki here, he was also in Friday the 13th, Jason Lives.
Yeah,
Oh,
which we
wow.
also have done. That was very early him. No, sorry,
Yeah,
we
I
haven't
mean,
done that one. We did number four, the final Friday.
we've done a few of those. I can't remember which one. There was one, I think, with Jason versus Carrie. I'm pretty sure we've done Jason X. I think we did the original way back in the day.
Yeah, there was one year where we
Man.
did the originals.
But we don't need to reminisce about that. I mean, you know, as a villain in this piece, he's perfectly fine. I mean, he's a little too lifetime villainy, like the Roger Chillingsworth character that's in every Lifetime movie that's 2 decades older than his partner and thinks he knows what's best. He's not older than Moore, but he's fine. He's fine as the villain.
Well, I mean, it's exactly what you would have as an 80s like crime villain, right? You have the handsome heartthrob who's this like square-jawed hero, and then you have the guy who's almost as hot, but not quite. That's the
Oh,
villain,
okay. So the
right?
Judge Reinhold character.
Exactly. That's a good comparison. He's a very Judge Reinhold character. Where you've got this dude who, whoa, sorry, I accidentally unmuted it. I've been watching the movie in the background to make sure I keep things in order.
Just also want to talk about the subway guy, because we didn't talk about
Oh,
the first
Vincent
time.
Chiavelli, the late great.
Yes,
Yes.
that's the sort of thing I wanted more from this movie. I mean, who's that guy? What's
Yeah.
the afterlife for him? I mean, it sounds like he was a murder victim and is angry because nobody brought his murderers to justice. But how does that work? How is that the same as what Patrick going on with Patrick Swayze?
Well, maybe. I mean, because I was kind of thinking about it while watching it, and so the first scene we have with him, whatever, he just yells, but then Patrick Swayze realizes that he can interact with the world around him, so he goes back. And somehow rail car floors count as floors and they don't fall through them. So that's good. All floors
Although
hold floor.
apparently ghosts are able to shove each other through walls, and
And
even then, I'm not sure.
he also hit his head, like he slides him through like several cars, and then he hits his head at like on the kind of guard thing outside of the car. So
Really?
yeah, he hits his head on it, and then the guy pops out the window and he says, "Stay out of my car."
Oh, right.
So I was like, okay, he just slid through several walls and then bang, bunks his head on the lat. I mean,
And
which
then, for that matter, how is he able to travel with the car? Because he's not moving as fast as the train car
that
is.
wall just counted as a floor. That wall is really a floor. That's what I'm just going to accept about that. But what I was going to say about the subway guy is we don't know if somebody pushed him, because then he kind of freaks out and goes crazy and he jumps in front of a train, which is just what he said. Like, as soon as Patrick Swayze was like, "Someone pushed you," and he's like, "What? What do you think? I jumped? What do you think? I did it my, you know?" And then he jumped in front of a train. Like, so it's possible that he did do it himself, and he's, upset and crazy and in denial. So, but I agree. I think he's very interesting. And actually, I was terrified of this guy as a kid. So my husband said he was scared of the. Who are the Star Wars guys with the red eyes that come and like scrounge
The
around?
Ewoks?
No, the
No,
like
you're talking about
no,
the
the
Jawas,
Jawas,
the
the
Jawas.
Jawas.
I wasn't scared of those in this movie. I was scared of the subway guy. That was what I was like frightened of as a kid. So that was interesting to me. But yeah, I thought, and then he was surprisingly sweet. And is that guy, you guys would know, is he like a famous comedian or something?
No, his name is
He
Vincent
is.
Schiavelli. He was just, I mean, at least in my head, he's just a like one of the late. I mean, he died 5 years ago. He's just an incredible
He
character
died a
actor.
while ago, actually, which is if we say when, it's going to make everyone feel old.
He died in 2005.
2005.
But he has been in actually a bunch of previous episodes. The guy, he's one of those dudes, Kieko. He has 165 credits on IMDb because he. Back in the day, a face like his was almost a special effect. And I don't mean to be mean. He's just, when you see him immediately, you kind of get it.
He was
I.
in Batman Returns, if you ever saw that, as the guy with the monkey and the organ grinder.
He was in
He.
previous episode Tomorrow Never Dies. He's the
Yes, he
torture
was.
guy. I mean, he's also in. Go
He
ahead.
was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He was in
He
Death to Smoochie.
let's reach out to our crowd. He was the guy who had his brother growing out of his chest in an X-Files episode. He was also in Independence Day. He was also in Hey Arnold. He was also in God, he must have been in a half dozen
Who
future episodes. Escape from Witch
is he in Hey
Mountain.
Arnold? Good Lord.
The guy actually looks like him, but he was a guy named Mr. Bailey. He was and he was also Vincent the Pigeon Man as well. He was in
I remember the Pigeon Man. Oh boy.
Go. But he just has a look about him. It's this kind
Yeah.
of like he could have been Nosferatu's number two. Like it just, and I don't mean that in a bad way. The guy's an incredible actor, but here they give him like sunken eyes and everything.
Yeah.
And he's remarkable. He's this guy who does it. So much of this movie is, I mean, it's a standard ghost thing. They're ghosts because they have some sort of unresolved mystery, right? They have some unfinished business, and his unfinished business is just he refuses to die. Like he is so upset by his death and being shoved on the train, he's harassing people who go on the train. That's what it
And we never learn like when he died or anything.
is. Nope.
No. I mean, I tried to kind of look at his clothes to sort of get, but I mean, they seemed very nondescript to me, so I don't think there were any clues. I don't think it really matters that much, which is sad because it's really intriguing and like you want to know. Especially, I think what's really cool is that he's so awful and scary in the first scene, and then when Patrick Swayze goes back to him, he helps him. Like, it's like somebody actually took the time to talk to him, and then he's nice and in his
No,
way.
you're
So.
absolutely right. And again, like as far as character development kind of things go, I like this. And I know, help me out here, Daniel. Beetlejuice is before this or after this?
Before.
Before. It reminds me a lot of that, like just to have someone who explains to Swayze how this all
Yeah.
works. Now, I will say, the thing we always talk about in this is them ripping off scenes. Because they don't do that, it's nice that they do it in this way. Because since they do it in this way, it doesn't feel like they're just ripping off Beetlejuice. But it does make me wish, I wonder what, if anything, say Beetlejuice 2. It's coming out soon. It will probably end up on this podcast because we used to do that.
We did, and I'm not looking. I think that movie is going to be a disaster, but we'll
I
see.
agree with you. That's why it's going to end up on this show. However, it would be interesting if Beetlejuice 2 happened a few years later and it was this. The idea that now there's a way that the ghost can help solve a different crime, a different mystery. Like I don't hate this idea. It just feels so weird in this context.
Well, it feels like a first draft, which Beetlejuice kind of did too. If you ever get a chance, you should watch the musical version on stage. My wife and I saw it right after around Christmas this year. It was great.
Of Ghost or
Lauren Boebert
Beetlejuice?
of Beetlejuice, and Lauren Boebert approved too, so you know it's good.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, Beetlejuice was kind of first draft in that it introduced ideas but didn't really expand upon them that well. I mean, if you actually watch the movie, there's a whole lot unexplained about what
Yeah.
Beetlejuice is and what the rules are. And it's the same as this, really, except this, since it all takes place on Earth, doesn't have as many interesting ideas.
Well, I will just give my caveat here, which I'm not going to say you can't judge. Of course you can. You're a critic. But it's the same thing I would say about any time travel movie. The second you start thinking too much about the afterlife in any of these things, you're kind of screwed, right? Like,
Yeah, no, vampires, like when you superheroes, when you sit down to watch a movie, you have to accept some things. I mean, ghosts not going through floors is like pretty universal because otherwise every single ghost movie would be just ghosts like, oops, slipping through the floor again, you know, like
I mean, at least, well, they made a choice because they could have also just had them hover. He doesn't hover, he walks. And I mean, honestly, from a direction point of view, it means that your actor is actually doing something. If he was floating, which previous episode, that Casper movie. The woman who deserves the credit is Christina Ricci, who's acting against a tennis
had to
ball that
deal with
entire
all
fucking movie, because he only turns into Kevin Sa Devin Sawa, I think, in the last like 5 seconds, where he like lifts her up, he has like a little kid boner, and then they all scream at her, and then the movie ends. Like it's very strange, and so like. The fact that Swayze, I will say, the way that they do this, I think across the board is really, really, really good, because the way that they do it is he is clearly interacting with these other actors and actresses the entire time. And then when he tries to reach out and do something, like strike someone, then it becomes green screen for half a second. That's the only way you could do this. Otherwise, it looks like garbage. And the green screen here is pretty good for 1990. And
Yeah.
so, like, at one point when Tony Goldwyn is like made a move at Demi Moore, he's like literally throwing bows, and it's just going through Tony Goldwyn, who does not react at all. And that's when he goes to Vincent Schiavelli and tries to learn how to move this shit, because he sees Schiavelli knock someone's newspaper out of the way, which is great. The next scene of any consequence is the one that I think is my favorite scene of the movie, other than the fact that they first base it over some Play-Doh. First base it, they fucking steal home. But it's when Whoopi Goldberg goes to the bank and janks about
Oh,
$4 million.
yeah.
It's a great scene because we got this little
It
old lady who's the teller, and Whoopi Goldberg gets a check for $4 million. And this is Reagan bucks. So it's like today, like $25 million or whatever it is. And she's losing her goddamn mind. I love this so
I
much.
love when she signs her real name and Patrick Swayze notices and he yells at her and she's like, "Oops." Signed the wrong name. Like, they didn't think that was a red flag at all. They were just like, what?
Oh, this
Yeah.
scene is so magnificently awkward.
It's and again, well done. Because again, for me, the comedic scenes are the best.
I did. I feel like I tend to not follow too closely on some of the stuff like heist scene where like you have to follow every single step and like I didn't really get what was happening. Like she got the cash, she sent the thing up to the third floor and then she went upstairs and then they, you know, scammed the guy together and I was like, I don't really understand what's happening here, but it was all funny, so that's all that matters.
Okay, so effectively what's happening is, if I understand it, and you know, again, Daniel, you can help me out here. I know Keiko, you've seen it a million times, but I just imagine you were staring at Patrick Swayze's beautiful blues the whole time, like, because he's got them dreamy eyes. But effectively what's happening is what they're doing, what Tony Goldwyn's doing is he's siphoning off monies and putting them in these kind of fake accounts that don't mean anything. One of them is Rita here, who she's pretending to be, and Swayze finds the information, and eventually we find Swayze essentially logging into his computer. So presumably he has access to all these files, because what's happening is we don't know what he's gotten into, but Tony Goldwyn owns a lot of money to a lot of people, and perhaps the only way that they're not going to break his knees is that if he steals a bunch of money off of whatever they're doing. And so now
They never
Rita.
really explain the scam, which is actually pretty smart on their part. They just let everyone know that the $4 million is being embezzled for the mob. And you don't know anything beyond that because you really don't need to.
I think, I mean, I guess I get that. I think I just didn't understand what all the hullabaloo was with the bank scenes where she's going. She's like, I don't know what she sent up. What was the first thing that, you know, I don't know. It was just.
I mean, honestly, that part, you're right. It doesn't truly matter. And
It
so they
doesn't
don't spend a
matter.
lot of time on it. Like, the thing that I think is the most confusing is why Demi Moore decides to show up that
Right.
Yeah, well, it's because because the creepo villain invited her out for coffee and invited to like meet her at the bank.
Well, because that's where they work. They work upstairs. They're the white collar guys on the third floor, and they just happen to show up right as Whoopi Goldberg is there. Because you need, I mean, it's a contrivance, but that's what
Well,
these movies need.
I think also, no, that was because that was that night that he shows up like freaked out that the money's all gone.
Right.
Because
Right.
I,
Well,
yeah, because it
because
would make sense if she
Goldberg
went to
and
check on
Swayze
him.
stole it.
Right. No, I was just wondering like why she was there. So I was thinking it would make sense if she was there to check on him to be like, are you okay? You seemed weird, you know, but that was that night. So that wasn't why. But I mean, it doesn't ultimately, it doesn't really matter too much. It's just kind of interesting. I'm not in this movie for the bank heist stuff or the mob stuff. I'm just in it for the romance and the funnies.
No, you need a contrivance and you need a plot driver, and that's what this is. It just, I think it's great. So I mean, after this whole, like, it's not a will they won't they, it's a closed door farce, and they're moving through and they're trying to get out of here. This is like the end of this is where the plot just, I guess, kind of starts to fly. Like, Tony
Yeah, it
Goldwyn
goes pretty
realized,
quick after this.
yeah. Tony Goldwyn realizes, and I guess he doesn't have to take out Demi Moore, but he is considering it, right?
Well, yeah, he know. I think he, at this point he knows that Patrick Swayze is a ghost, and he knows that the way to get to him is her, and he's just insane because he knows he's going to die anyway because he's lost all this money that he needed. So he threatens her.
Yeah.
Well, the mob is after him, right?
Yeah.
You know, I will say I did get a hearty laugh at the scene where Patrick Swayze tells her to give the check to the nuns.
That was legitimately funny, yes.
And she is so mad at the nuns, and she's swearing to herself from their perspective, because she's actually talking to Patrick Swayze. And so she's talking to herself, and the nuns are very uncomfortable until they see the amount of money on the check. And they're like, "All right, crazy lady, we will take your money." And then the older nun literally faints. Again, it is a very funny scene out of Spy Hard. And I'm fine with it because Whoopi Goldberg is the anchor, and it's so good. Like, she doesn't want to let go of the check. And she's laughing. It's good. It's very good. And this is then, Kieko, like you said, the scene where we get the amazing scene where Tony Goldwyn is losing his goddamn mind because he can't
Yeah.
figure out the money. The Rita account is empty, and he turns off the computer, and then the computer turns back on, and then using you know his ghost powers now, Swayze types murderer, and then Sam is here like a trillion times. Pretty
Yeah.
good, pretty good. And I do like the I guess it's stop motion animation of the keyboard typing,
Yeah.
which looks good. And again, I do like this because it's the 19 it's now 1990, it's not the 80s anymore, it's 1990, but I do like the late 80s early 90s like sitcom of like cop ghost, like convincing criminals to turn themselves in because they think they're going crazy because there's a
Yeah.
ghost, and that's
Yeah.
pretty great.
And is this the mugger guy? Was he taken out? He was taken out way before
No,
this, or
this
was
is
it
right around,
the
because this is
same
when
night? Okay.
Tony
Yeah.
Goldwyn goes back to the house and he's sweating like hell because he knows the mob is going to come and like destroy him. And he asked Demi Moore if, like, so what's going on? And this is when everything is getting really intense. So
Yeah.
this is when he goes and calls on the mugger to come and take her out, because he almost takes her out himself at this point. The mugger, I believe, is watching Arsenio Hall. And then this is when Goldwyn and him come back and try to first kill Whoopi Goldberg and then come and kill Demi Moore. Right? I do like Patrick Swayze freaking out the robber at Whoopi Goldberg's house.
Yeah, and chasing him out into the street.
Where he gets super killed. He
Yeah.
gets
Oh, yeah,
super killed.
he. Yeah, that was like a Mortal Kombat fatality. But you know, it would have been interesting if during some of these scenes we didn't see Patrick Swayze at all, because it kind of ruins the suspense and the illusion of ghosts interacting with the physical world there.
They do enough of that. Like, there's scenes of the mugger being like chased down the hallway with stuff just flying off the walls, and you know, so I think I like it going back and forth
All right.
between seeing, and because it's not like a horror movie where we're not supposed to know yet, you know.
Yeah, no,
That's
I think you're
fair.
right, because like there is the scene where where right before the murderer is killed, where like literally it's a I forget who turns on the hot water, but it's a steamy bathroom, and Swayze writes boo
Oh,
on the
boo.
mirror, but you don't see him. It's just the word boo appearing, which pretty good. I think it's the sink. I think he turns the hot water on the sink, which is great because then the guy shoots at the ghost. We don't see the ghost. It's just shooting randomly in the room, which is awesome. And then again, like we mentioned, he super dies. He gets pinned between a, like, I think it's a yellow cab and a truck. And in his death, we see the body rise up, you know, standard thing. Again, the body is thrown, the ghost is thrown clear, and then we see the corpse over the hood.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. He didn't know right away. So he like turns around, he looks like, oh, and then he sees that he's actually dead. And then the Jawas take him.
And Tony Goldwyn is like, runs off. And again, you mentioned the Jawas. This is where things get silly because very early on, Patrick Swayze, he's one of the good ones. So heaven opens up for him. But here we get these like shadow people. Like, this is like creepypasta stuff. And it's very silly. It is so silly. The guy freaks out. I mean, and you mentioned the TV edit. This movie is, I think, 209, something like 2 hours and 9 minutes. I bet you they cut out a hair over 9 minutes, so it's like just under 2 hours, right? So that it fits a little bit better. Some of this dead, like they cut back to the corpse like 8 times. It's a lot. Although I do like the Jawas taking him. It's stupid. It is very silly. But Swayze watching this dude like get taken away by these ghost shadows is pretty funny. It's very funny.
He's very satisfied. He's very like, satisfied is the only way I can think to describe that.
Yeah.
And so then I guess Patrick Swayze is trying to get back to
Point. He gets to Whoopi about 30 seconds before the mugger gets there. And then he takes Whoopi back to see Demi because this is the only way they can communicate. And so after Tony Goldwyn blows up at Demi Moore, he realizes, oh shit, like now that the mugger's dead, we see Tony Goldwyn run away. He's coming for Demi Moore.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
He could like write her a note at this point. He could have done that.
You know, that probably would have been a little better than seeing him actually just ascend into heaven. If this is a little more mysterious and he got a farewell note that she could hold rather than a double exposed Xanadu Swayze kissing Demi Moore.
Yeah.
That's
pretty
easy. I will say, though, here, part of the thing is for them to get all together. So he gets in a yellow cab with Whoopi to try to get there, right? And this is when he possesses Whoopi. And this is, I mean, now, Daniel, you had a lot going on in your version of it. There's one part I do want to take away, which is they're doing this kind of, it's literally the shot from Beauty and the Beast, where there's, for no reason in this giant apartment, there's columns. And so they're panning around as the Patrick Swayze is, you know, making out with Demi Moore again. I just want one time when they pass between the columns to be her kissing Whoopi Goldberg.
Like that's what you like expect. And by the way, I looked up this apartment and it sold in 2015 for $10 million.
Not a shock. So.
You should have your Dr. Evil pinky right up next to your mouth as you say that.
That's right. Cause it is. It is an outrage. It's a gorgeous apartment and it is massive. But you know what? Good on them for actually being in New York and filming on location because it's gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I thought when I saw it. I was like, this has to be like a real loft, you know, that exists. So that was just an interesting tidbit. But yes, I had the exact same thought that I wanted to see just once between two columns, not for the whole time. I don't want to see the whole, but like to see, just to be like reminded. But I wonder if maybe they shot it. Like, I wonder if they shot that and they were like, no, this looks really stupid.
I wonder if you're right. There was maybe a trade screening and people laughed And they're like, nah, this is too important of a scene for it to be a joke.
Yeah, because it's so touching. It's so sweet. And do they actually make out? I mean, I don't really think they do. I think they're just like hugging a lot.
I think they kiss.
He kisses her at one point.
He does
nuzzling.
Kiss her.
I think he kisses her on the forehead, though. So I think it's like an just like affection. I don't think that it's romantic.
I could be wrong, but she does lean in with her mouth open. The whole but whatever. They do start with Whoopi because if I recall correctly, she's got her hands on her lap and Whoopi's hands wrapped around.
Yeah,
you see the hand.
Yeah.
And again, we cut back to the Everly Brothers, and then at the end of this. This is when Tony Goldwyn shows up with a gun. And this is where we have the final kind of, I don't know, 10 minutes of this movie, which is a chase scene where Tony Goldwyn is literally trying to kill everyone. He needs the money, man. And he believes that since Whoopi is here, she still has the check because no one would just, because I mean, Michael Cera doesn't believe that 10, like you would give away 10 or $4 million, $4 million.
$4 million, yeah.
But this is where Swayze is literally trying to hit him and can't and yada, yada, yada. I mean, I guess there's not a lot to say here other than now it's Demi Moore and Whoopi Goldberg running around trying to escape. And I asked my wife this, if it was an actress's choice or a director's choice that Demi Moore was not wearing a bra. And my wife said it was probably the producer or the director who decided that she was not going to run around. She was going to run around without a bra on because it's very obvious, especially here when they're trying to escape Tony Goldwyn.
I didn't notice that, actually.
I'm an expert in these things.
I'll have to rewatch it.
For sure. Oh, yeah, that's why Ghost is worth a rewatch right there.
Yeah.
And then Michael Cera gets
super killed.
He gets the guillotine.
Dude. This death, bravo. I don't know if they brought in Savini for this, but the dude gets cut right in half. It is so good. It is excellent. And at the time, like right before, like he's just grabbing Whoopi and like choking her like the hell out. Like Demi Moore. Like it's a pretty like intense scene. Frankly, much more intense than even Swayze's death, because like he's grabbing people, he's got a gun, like he's trying to but he gets shoved into this one of the giant glass panes and like cut in half before like, and again we have our little shadow friends show up, which I mean Daniel and I think will end up disagreeing on this movie, but something I will say is we should see the shadow people earlier if they're going to matter so much in the third act, because the two times we see them are like 10 minutes apart, 15 minutes apart in a 2-hour movie. They should show up at the beginning.
They should show up in the hospital scene.
Perfect. Right. Like we see a flatliner in the background and then we see instead of the light that he sees, we see the shadow people show up and he asks the little old man, like, the hell is that? He goes, didn't live a good life. And that's all you have to do. But the fact that we only see it first with the mugger and then we see it here, right? And then before we can even explain what's going on, because his earthly job is finished, we then see Swayze ascend to heaven in what really could have come out of like a VeggieTales episode. Although he does kiss Demi Moore as
himself.
She
can like hear him and see him for some reason.
Which again, that means that like in the, you know, in the stinger scene, she needs to be literally in a straitjacket being like locked up. Again, I love her, but if I saw a dead person and then I kissed them, I think I'd be locked away for a while. Like, I don't know how my brain would process it, but there's not enough, like, Wellbutrin in the world to make that feel okay.
Yeah. So I think I'm with Daniel that is a little much. Like, yeah. I think, but I did also kind of think about like Patrick Swayze and how he is known to have been lost too soon. And so I think it's kind
Sweet.
of neat that there is this scene of him that exists.
I mean, I will say, I think the part of it is that it lasts too long, right? Like, I
Really
almost
long.
wish, I mean, and this would have been even cheesier, we would still be making fun of it, but it's a little bit tighter, a little bit neater to have something more like It's a Wonderful Life, where we establish earlier, you know, something means blah, 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 blah. And then there's a kiss. There's a cut to, you know, he disappears during the kiss, and then a bell rings, and then a door, you know, something like that. Just something to let you know he's okay. Because the thing is not that he ends, he dies a Shakespearean death, where he has lines of dialogue. She's crying, he's looking at her, she's talking, he's talking, and then he ascends to the choir infinite. And there are like ghost men up above, and there are angels, and there's lavender, and there's a lot, and it goes on and on and on and on.
It could have been a penny, like a penny drops, penny falls, and
Yeah,
she,
he leaves behind the penny. He leaves
yeah.
one of those hit. There's already an angelic, hideous statue in the room. If there was just that moment where he takes the pose of the statue and it cuts to the statue, we're fine. But like it literally just goes on and on. It reminds me of is it, I think it's Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where there's just a bunch of lavender like foam and then a bunch of skeleton like Slenderman shadows. It's kind of like that, because he
Yes.
ascends up to heaven and then there's just, again, it's the choir infinite, like, and there's just like these outlines of shadow people. It's a lot. It's really a lot.
I think that's a good comparison right there. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, because visually it is very similar to that, except it's 13 years after the fact and doesn't look as convincing. For
Yes,
one,
the
for the other, like you said, this movie's lasted way too long.
it is Industrial Light and Magic who made this though, so
Oh, okay, there you go.
they had a coupon that day. Anyway, Kieko,
A little punch card.
you know all that special effects you did for the Zucca movies? What if we did one more, but this was an Academy movie? Anyway, Kieko, this is one you'd seen a million times. What are your final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I love this movie. I mean, I have the nostalgia factor, which counts, but it's fun and charming, and Whoopi Goldberg is great. Patrick Swayze is great. I think that's all I really need to say.
Daniel.
I mean, it's got some interesting ideas, but looking at the reputation it had back in 1990 is just incredible and misplaced. I mean, this was nominated for Best Picture. It's nowhere near that good, but I guess people have calmed down and enjoys the reputation it deserves now, which is, yeah, it's interesting. There are some good ideas, but overall, it's really a time capsule, and it's been subsequently done in much better movies in a much better way.
This is one of those movies I feel like most people feel like they've seen if they haven't. So I'd say check it out just because might as well see it. Like it's also one of these in like incredible and bizarre stories where in 1990 it cost $22 million to make, which is a lot, but it made $500 million in 1990, which is insane. And then it won two Academy Awards and I think it was nominated for six or seven. I don't know. It's one of those things too where like I love Patrick Swayze. He's not in a lot of movies, so I feel like people are gonna still watch this in a way that like a lot of the movies that we mentioned for the Academy Awards at the time, people don't watch anymore. Same with Whoopi Goldberg. I like her as an actress. She's not in a lot, so watch what you can. But I had fun with this. I enjoyed it. I watched it with my wife. We both enjoyed it. You know, it's kind of a it's a romantic movie. It's fun. It's also very weird at times, so enjoy it. Anyway, so this wraps up our February. This came out on our leap day. I don't know. Figured that was kind of a spooky day. But after, you know, Legend, Flashdance, Witch, Pretty Teen Witch, Pretty Woman, and Ghost, we need to, you know, change gears completely. So we're doing another movie with Ghost in the title. March is Matt Quinn's month, where he's scheduled the whole thing, and he's not on this episode because he's preparing for his own month, I guess. So we're doing The Ghost in the Darkness next week. followed by Mimic, The Phantom, and Priest, which I think between those four movies, it tells you all you need to know about Matt Quinn. So stay tuned next week and every future week. Check in. Thank you for reviewing and rating us. And thank you for all you do to keep us on the charts as we are finishing up our 10th season. This episode was 449. Next week is 450. So thank you for listening and thank you for doing what you do. Bye, everyone. Myopia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nur Trinette and Daniel Suttis and is hosted by Nick Hoffman with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Nur Trinette. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons/licenses by /4.0. Thanks.